So a reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 6, entitled The Cosmic Manifestation. Oh no, Chapter 6 is entitled Purusha Sukta, Confirmed. And so there's three verses today, texts 43 through 45. I guess we'll say the first one together, if that's okay, and then the other ones I'll do on my own. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Aham Bhavo Yagya Ime Prajesha. Daksha da yoge babad adayascha. Swarloka pala, kagaloka pala. Nureloka pala, shtalaloka pala. Please chant. Anyone else? Oh, okay. What? Oh, Mataji. So I'll read the other two verses by myself. Gandharva-vidya dadacharanesha ye yaksha raksho ragana ganataha ye vavrishinam rishabhapritrinam taitindra siddheshvara dhanavindraha anecha ye preta pishacha bhuta kushmande yado mrigapaksha deshaha Yet kincha loke bhagavan mahasvad ojar sahasvan balabat kshamavat Shri Shri vibhutyat mavar abhutarnam tatvam param rupa var asvarupam.
Ok.
Okay, so synonyms, I'll read by myself. Aham, myself, Brahmaji, Baba, Lord Shiva, Yajna, Lord Vishnu, Ime, all these, Praja, Isha, the father of the living beings, Daksha, Adaya, Daksha, Marichi, Manu, etc. Yea, those, Bhavat, yourself. Adaya Cha, the bachelor, Sanat Kumar and his brothers. Swar Loka Palaha, the leaders of the heavenly planets. Kaga Loka Palaha, the leaders of space travelers. Nir Loka Palaha, the leaders of mankind. Tala Loka Palaha, the leaders of the lower planets. Gandharva, the residents of Gandharva Loka. Vidyadara, the residents of the Vidyadara planet. Charana Isha, the leaders of the Charanas. Yea, as also others, Yaksha, the leaders of the Yakshas, Raksha, demons, Uraga, snakes, Naga, Nataha, the leaders of Nagaloka, below the earth, yea, others, Va, also, Rishinam, of the sages, Rishabaha, the chief, Prithrinam, of the forefathers, Daitya Indra, the leaders of the atheists, Siddha Ishvara, leaders of the Siddhaloka planets, spacemen, Danava Indraha, leaders of the non-Aryans, Anye, besides them, Cha, also, yea, those, Preta, dead bodies, Pishacha, evil spirits, Bhuta, Jinn, Kushmanda, a special type of evil spirit, Yadaha, aquatics, Murga, animals, Pakshi, Adisha, giant eagles, Yat, anything, Kim, Cha, and everything, Loke, in the world, Bhagavat, possessed of Bhaga, or extraordinary power, Mahasvat, of a special degree, Ojaha, Oja Sahasvat, special, specific mental and sensual dexterity. Balavat, possessed of strength. Kshamavat, possessed of forgiveness. Shri, beauty. Shri, ashamed of pious, impious acts. Vibhuti, riches. Atmavat, possessed of intelligence. Adbhuta, wonderful. Arnam, race. Tattvam, specific truth. Param, transcendental. Rupavat, as if the form of Asvarupam, not the form of the Lord. Translation. I myself, Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu, great generators of living beings like Daksha and Prajapati, yourself, Narada and the Kumaras, heavenly demigods like Indra and Chandra, the leaders of the Boar Loka planets, the leaders of the earthly planets, the leaders of the lower planets, the leaders of the Gandharva planets, the leader of the Vidyadhara planets, the leaders of the Charana Loka planets, the leaders of the Yakshas, Rakshas, and Uragas, the great sages, the great demons, the great atheists, and the great spacemen, as well as the dead bodies, evil spirits, Satans, Jinn, Kushmandas, great aquatics, great beasts, and great birds, etc. In other words, anything and everything which is exceptionally possessed of power, opulence, mental and perceptual dexterity, strength, forgiveness, beauty, modesty, opulence, and breeding, whether in form or formless, may appear to be the specific truth and the form of the Lord, but actually they are not so. They are only a fragment of the transcendental potency of the Lord. Purport, those in the list given above, beginning from the name Brahmaji, the first living creature within the universe, down to Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu, Narada, and other powerful demigods, men, supermen, sages, rishis, and other lower creatures of extraordinary strength and opulence, including the dead bodies, satans, evil spirits, jinn, aquatics, birds, and beasts, may appear to be the Supreme Lord, but factually, none of them is the Supreme Lord. Every one of them possesses only a fragment of the great potencies of the Supreme Lord. The less intelligent man is surprised to see the wonderful actions of material phenomena, as the aborigines are fearful of a great thunderbolt, a great and gigantic banyan tree, or a great lofty mountain in the jungle. For such undeveloped human beings, merely the slight display of the Lord's potency is captivating. A still more advanced person is captivated by the powers of the demigods and goddesses. Therefore, those who are simply astonished by the powers of anything in the creation of the Lord, without any factual information of the Lord himself, are known as Shaktas, or worshippers of the great powers. The modern scientist is also captivated by the wonderful actions and reactions of natural phenomena, and therefore is also a Shakta. These lower grade persons gradually rise to become Suryas, worshippers of the sun god, or Ganapatyas, worshippers of the mass of people, as Janata Janardan, or Duryodhana Narayan, etc., in the form of Ganapati. and then rise to the platform of worshipping Lord Shiva, and search for the ever-existing soul, and then to the stage of worshipping Lord Vishnu, the Supersoul, etc., without any information of Govinda, Lord Krishna, who is the original Lord Vishnu. Okay, sorry. In other ways, some are worshippers of race, nationality, birds, beasts, evil spirits, satans, etc. The general worship of Shanidev, the lord of distressful condition, and Sitala Devi, the goddess of smallpox, is also common to the mass of people. And there are many foolish men who worship the mass of people or the poor class of men. So different persons, societies, and communities, etc., worship some of the potent manifestations of the Lord, wrongly accepting the powerful object as God. But in this verse, it is advised by Brahmaji that none of them is the Supreme Lord. They are only borrowed plumes from the original Almighty Lord Sri Krishna. When the Lord advises in Bhagavad Gita to worship Him alone, it is to be understood that worshipping Lord Krishna includes worshipping all that is mentioned, because He, Lord Krishna, includes everyone. When the Lord is described as formless in the Vedic literatures, it is to be understood that all these forms mentioned above within the experience of universal knowledge are different exhibitions of the Lord's transcendental potencies only, and none of them factually represent the transcendental form of the Lord. But when the Lord actually descends to the earth or anywhere within the universe, the less intelligent class of men also mistake Him to be one of them, and thus they imagine the transcendence to be formless or impersonal. Factually, the Lord is not formless, nor does He belong to any of the multi-forms experienced within the universal forms. One should try to know the truth about the Lord by following the instructions of Brahma Ji. Okay. Om Jnana Tamindasya Gananjana Shalakoya Chakshu Unmilita Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest ignorance. My spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my most humble obeisances to His lotus feet. I would repeat the verse, but it's a really long verse, and I only have a few minutes to kind of share what my small realizations or what I thought of yesterday when reading this. I thought of Bilva Mangala Thakur, actually, and we know the story that he was actually attached to a prostitute and enjoying with this prostitute, and he would see her every night and enjoy with her. But one night there was a storm, it was crazy weather, and he had to make a big endeavor to make it to her house to enjoy with her. He had to swim through a river, and, you know, he almost like died and drowned on the way there. You know, he fell off a huge wall. So many things happened, but he ended up at her house, sweaty, you know, all wet, drenched from the water, bruised and bloody and exhausted. And she was like amazed, and she told him that if you had this intensity to see Krishna, you would be a pure devotee. And he actually saw that his spiritual master was speaking through her. He saw that as an instruction. So he followed that instruction and became a pure devotee, became Bilva Mangala Thakur. A few things happened on the way of him going to Vrindavan, but I'll just leave that aside. So when I recently arrived back here in California, I arrived at the Long Beach Airport, and as I was waiting for my ride to pick me up, Long Beach Airport's a small airport, so there was only maybe 20 or 25 other passengers that came off the airplane that were waiting outside to get their ride. And a car pulls up to pick some person up who's about my age, a man. And his mother, it was his mother that was picking him up. And she, like, went hysterical to see her son again. So there was probably years of separation or something. She just went crazy. And she caused a whole scene in the airport. She was weeping. She was like, yelling. And she would hug him very tightly, squeeze him, you know, squeeze his cheeks and kiss him. And then just kind of look at him and do it again. And everybody was looking at it. It just caused a huge scene. And I couldn't help but think that when the soul goes back to Godhead, that this is probably like something like the reaction of Krishna to see how the soul that is his part and parcel, his servant that has been in the material world for so long, has finally come back to the spiritual world. And then I was thinking about Bilva Mangala Thakur, that if this mother had this much devotion and intensity to want to see Krishna, she'd be a pure devotee. So I should actually follow in her footsteps, but you know, for Krishna, not for a son. In the eighth canto, the chapter describing the Matsya avatar, Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that the goal of the Krishna consciousness movement is to help the souls go back to Godhead so we can dance with Krishna, play with Krishna, and we can eat with Krishna. As we said, the goal of this movement is about, and a nice example given, I've heard in a class, that there were three construction workers, and they were stacking bricks. They were putting one brick, putting some cement, and putting another brick, one by one, very tedious job. And a person goes up to one of the workers, the first worker, and says, you know, what are you doing? And he says, I'm just stacking bricks, putting one after another, because it's my, why are you doing it? It's my job, you know, I was told to do this. He goes to the second worker and he asks, you know, what are you doing? I'm stacking bricks, but why are you doing it? Because I'm building a wall. It's going to be a very strong wall. And then he goes to the third worker and he asks them the same thing. Why are you stacking bricks? And the third worker said, well, I'm stacking bricks, I'm making a wall, but then we're going to make three other walls and we're going to build a roof. We're building a temple. So the third worker knew the final outcome, the goal of what he was doing. So we should be like this third worker, understanding the forefront of our lives, understanding the goal of our philosophy, and the ultimate result of our sadhana. So the reason why I mention this is this chapter, Purusha Sukta, confirmed, as well as surrounding chapters, explain so many of, you know, like universal creation and Krishna's different functions having to do with the material energy, his different Purusha avatars. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila Chapter 1 in a purport, Prabhupada says that the desired change of heart is visible in reluctance to do anything not congenial to the devotional way. So we can measure our advancement. How much are we reluctant to do anything that's not congenial to the devotional way? And then he goes on to say, to create such a change of heart, conclusive discussion about Krishna and his potencies is absolutely necessary. So hearing everything in the Bhagavatam systematically is absolutely necessary to genuinely create this change of heart, where all we want is Krishna. That's all we want to do, is love Krishna. And we can take inspiration from Lord Brahma, who's speaking these verses. Brahma took inspiration from Krishna in the beginning of the universe to create this universe, to create the Prajapatis and the different elements and different planets. And every day when he goes to sleep, there's a partial devastation, half the universe is destroyed. When he wakes up, he has to create whatever was destroyed again. So he has to create the universe every single day. He lives for 311 trillion, 40 billion years. He does the same service every single day. He has to do the same thing every day. So talk about steadiness and service. Lord Brahma is like the epitome of steadiness. And so many of you great souls are following in his footsteps, being steady in your service for many years. So we could take inspiration from Lord Brahma and so many senior devotees in this way. And Brahma's explaining in this verse, he describes so many great beings who have different powers all within this material world. And he says that anything and everything which is exceptionally possessed of power, opulence, strength, etc., may be considered, may appear to be the specific truth in the form of the Lord, but actually they are not so. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that the less intelligent man is surprised to see the wonderful actions of material phenomenon. And then he mentions the aborigines. They're fearful of, you know, a great thunderbolt or a great gigantic banyan tree. So there's like different cultures that worship different phenomenon in the world because they think that that's supreme. They don't have higher knowledge of other than that. And even the still more advanced person will worship the demigods. So this is like the natural function of the soul is to worship or to adore something that's superior to himself. And no matter who that is, everybody falls in that category. Even, you know, he was saying that like the scientists, they're like even atheistic scientists, they're in awe and reverence to the universe and the material cosmos. Or even just like your normal atheist, you know, has his like favorite philosopher or whatever, speculative philosopher that he adores. But Prabhupada goes on to say, towards the end of this, anyways, oh yeah, here we go. But in this verse, it is advised by Brahmaji that none of them is the Supreme Lord. They are only borrowed plumes from the original Almighty Lord Sri Krishna. It is advised in the Bhagavad Gita to worship him alone. It's understood that worshiping Krishna includes worshiping all that is mentioned above, because he, Lord Krishna, includes everyone. So when Chittaketu Maharaj saw the Lord, saw Vishnu, he was actually in tears. Like he couldn't speak. His voice was choked up. Then when he started offering prayers when he kind of like settled down a little bit. And in one of the purports, Prabhupada says something really cool. He says, all letters of the alphabet and the words constructed by those letters are only meant for offering prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's why speech actually exists in the first place. Our ability to speak is simply for glorifying Krishna. And you can apply that to anything. Our ability to walk, our ability to move, our existence itself is simply meant for serving Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada says something similar in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita in the purport. He says that this is the secret of Krishna consciousness, is a realization that there is no existence besides Krishna. There's no existence besides Krishna. And this is the platform of peace and fearlessness. It's the platform of fearlessness, because what's there to fear? If you think about anything that people fear, if someone sees it as connected with Krishna, the fear vanishes, because Krishna's all good. You know? So there's actually no fear in this mentality. And this is actually the cause of all problems, is this vision of seeing objects of this world as separate from Krishna. And that's called Maya. Maya's not existing in the sense objects themselves, but rather Maya is a type of consciousness. It's a demeanor of how we perceive things. So sometimes like you'll hear devotees say, oh, that's Maya, or like referring to like the opposite sex, like he's Maya or she's a Maya Devi or whatever, but this is an incorrect terminology. You know, she's not Maya or that thing's not Maya. It's because we're in Maya that we're seeing it as separate from Krishna and we're seeing it as an object for our sense enjoyment. And Lord Brahma in the 10th
since he's speaking here, it's kind of cool to see how later on in the 10th canto, right now he's glorifying Krishna and he's speaking high philosophy. But in the 10th canto, he becomes a little bit bewildered and he's trying to test to see if Krishna is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And once Krishna reveals himself that he is the Supreme Vishnu, he starts offering prayers. And in one of the prayers, Lord Brahma says something very similar, how the actually Maya is a state of consciousness and actually illusion doesn't exist in the first place. It's the idea of seeing things separate from Krishna is the actual illusion. Lord Brahma says, the conception of material bondage and the conception of liberation, both are manifestations of ignorance. Bondage and liberation, both those concepts are ignorance. They cease to exist when one understands the soul is distinct from matter. At that time, bondage and the conception of liberation no longer have any significance, just as day and night have no significance from the perspective of the sun. Such a deep point. And in the purport, just a quick sentence, this so-called liberation, thinking you'll become liberated from matter, is simply the giving up of illusion rather than the release from actual bondage. So when we come, everybody comes to devotional service having, you know, baggage from their material conditioning. And everybody has different attachments. Like, for some people, it's really hard for them to stop smoking cigarettes. It's just a habit. It's an addiction. For me, I've never had that problem. So it almost seems like, what's the big deal? You just give it up. It's just not a big deal. But I have different attachments that person who's addicted to cigarettes might think the same thing about me. Why do you have those attachments, man? It's just insignificant. Just give it up. So we're all coming with different attachments. And periodically, even though we're engaged in devotional service, they may periodically come to the surface. The idea is not to ponder or entertain these past attachments. Contemplating the objects of the senses, lust develops, attachment develops. So this is the idea of chastity, is we should be chaste to Krishna and the spiritual master, that only, you know, Krishna is our object of love, and making a determination within ourselves to not give our love or our attention in any variety of Krishna's external energy. Because this is like the mentality of a prostitute. I hate to say it. It actually is, though, if you think about it. Like, imagine a wife saying, I love my husband. Most of the time I'm dedicated to him. But I also love this other man sometimes. It's almost like us saying, we really like Krishna, but I also like this other thing. It's not a very appropriate mentality. So, Vyavasaid Mika Budhir Eko Guru Nandana, we should be one-pointed in our attention, in our focus, in our endeavor to love a particular person, which is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the last purport, where Prabhupada's describing how the Lord is described as formless in the Vedic literatures. So that's what it may seem. And it's understood that all these forms mentioned above within the experience of universal knowledge are different exhibitions of the Lord's transcendental potency. When the Lord actually descends to the earth or anywhere within the universe, the less intelligent class of men also mistake him to be one of them. So another deep point. In the same chapter that I was just describing, chapter 14th of the 10th canto, when Brahma is offering prayers to Krishna and trying to beg forgiveness for stealing his cowherd boys, Brahma says another really deep point having to do with what Prabhupada is saying here. He says that although he's speaking to Krishna here, although you are now within this universe, the whole universal creation is within your body as Mother Yashoda saw. Just imagine that. The universe expands from Krishna, and Krishna is within the universe, who the universe expands from, and simultaneously the universe is in him when he opens his mouth. The universe comes from him, he's within the universe, but when he opens his mouth to Mother Yashoda, the universe is also within him. It's like bewildering. And in the purport, It says, we may find like a cooking pot in the house, but we can hardly expect to find the same house within the same pot. Think about that. Walking into a house, looking at a cooking pot, and in the cooking pot, you're looking at the same house that you're inside of, inside the cooking pot. And that's like, that's what Lord Brahma was explaining. That's like Krishna coming into this universe. It's something like that. Okay. And yeah, the reason why Lord Brahma was a little bit bewildered, he saw this cute little sweet cowherd boy that's supposed to be the source of all of existence. We learned this from the first canto, Ete Chamsa Kala Pumsa Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. The source of the huge manifestation, the Lord Vishnu, Karuna Dakshaya Vishnu, who expands all the universes and all these different potencies, is actually just a plenary portion of an expansion of this little sweet cowherd boy. So Lord Brahma couldn't conceive this. So sometimes, even like on book distribution, we're like challenged, especially like by Christians or whatever. But some other people also, they can't believe that we actually have books that have paintings of what God actually looks like. It's like, it's inconceivable to them. And how is something so high just like displayed so freely? Like it's almost like a cheap thing to display. So it's inconceivable that this painting can actually be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But actually the confidentiality of Krishna and his intimate pastimes is given to the general public, but that confidentiality is still kept in the sense that it's an open secret. Open because it's open to the public. Like usually during non-COVID, the temple is open, right? People could come here. They could see the deity. We give out books like anything, millions of books worldwide. But still, it's a secret because although the pastimes of Krishna are within the book, people are not able to understand it or penetrate it without getting Krishna's mercy. And people dare like point to the picture and say, oh, that, you know, that's not God, or they try to find flaws in our philosophy or say it's not scientifically proven or whatever. But Prabhupada gives this example of licking the outside of the jar of honey. And, you know, just imagine someone's holding the jar of honey and they're trying to explain the contents and criticize what it tastes like and criticize its texture, but they've never even opened the jar and they've never tasted it themselves. So that's just like, you know, people's speculation. But we can actually apply this to ourselves also in a very subtle degree. When Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya first saw Lord Chaitanya, again, he couldn't understand that Lord Chaitanya was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And his relative, Gopinathacharya, was trying to explain that, no, Lord Chaitanya is an incarnation of Krishna. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had all these reasons why not to believe, you know, that the scriptures don't explain that Krishna comes in the Kali Yuga, therefore he can't be an incarnation. So many different things he was trying to explain. And Gopinathacharya then called Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya a Bahir Mukhajana, which means a person who is influenced by the external energy and cannot understand the real substance. I heard Madhavananda Prabhu speak about this in the class. And basically, this is also like a danger that we see in maybe even within the Vaishnav society, is that Kali can create so many external distractions from us, for us, and we may actually become carried away by these distractions and forget the essence or forget the real substance. I mean, Bahir Mukhajana, externally engulfed, externally absorbed. And there may be different like controversial things that people speak about or different disagreements on little small details that are actually very insignificant. Or like even, this has happened a couple of times, like on book distribution, this has happened at least two or three times, like within the past few years, where I meet someone who knows about our movement, but somehow they read something weird on the internet, or they learned like some person who kind of devotee who made some strange mistakes many decades ago. But then they'll hold that against us. Like, I've tried to give them a book, and they say, no, I don't want anything to do with the Hare Krishna movement because this thing and that and so many reasons. So this is actually the external energy. This is an example of a Bahir Mukha Jana, that they're not actually looking for the essence. These things that people have done, or these external situations or controversies, they actually have nothing to do with our philosophy. They have nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. And then we hear, even like, I've had friends that leave the movement because of so many reasons, so many excuses that they bring up, that, you know, this manager didn't treat me right, or this devotee offended me, or, you know, I don't agree with the way that they're doing things. So they think that that's a good reason to leave the Krishna consciousness movement. But Madhavananda Prabhu says that actually they're not leaving for these reasons. They're actually leaving because they were never deep in their bhajan. They were externally, they were absorbed in the externals. And Rupa Goswami says this in the Nectar of Instruction. He gives the example of the Ganges, how the Ganges is always pure, but someone with external vision will see, you know, the stool or the trash or the dead fish that's floating in the Ganges, and point to those things and make those things excuses why not to get the full benefit of the Ganges. So this is actual, what is ISKCON? If we think about it, ISKCON's a manifestation, a pure manifestation and avatar of Krishna. It's a representative of all the previous acharyas, Lord Chaitanya, the six Goswamis, Srila Prabhupada, so many nice Vaishnavas in our movement. We have the highest philosophy, chanting the holy names, but someone who is picking up all the externals and giving that as an excuse, why not to chant, why not to engage oneself in the avatar of this age, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. These external things, they don't pollute the holy name, they don't pollute the acharyas, they don't pollute Krishna. So the reason why I'm saying this is, to one degree or another, we should not get distracted from the external situations that happen around us, but rather we should focus on the essence and the substance of our movement, and not become Bahir Mukha Janas, externally motivated devotees, but be internally motivated devotees to serve Krishna. And to, this is a very old Back to Godhead copy, 1976, I found the other day. Such a nice painting of Krishna with the cowherd boys. And this is a painting from Jadarani. She explains in there that the gopis are somewhere around here. They're looking as Krishna returns from pasturing the cows, the cowherd boys. So this is our goal. This is where we want to go. And we don't want to get distracted. Time is short. Our life is short. As every day that goes by, we're one day closer to leaving our bodies. So let's try not to come back here, and let's try to go there. So utilize your time wisely. And that's all I have to say now. Does anybody have any questions? Yes, Acharya.
Hare Krishna.
Archita.
Thank you for a nice presentation. Your last point is very well taken about the public sometimes being distracted by this thing, that thing, and missing the essence of ISKCON, of what we're doing. So we shouldn't give them any fuel. The big controversy right now is this COVID-19 vaccine. Several devotees have come to me to discuss that. We should not give the public fuel to stop us in our activities. In other words, you may be out distributing, and somebody may very well ask you, you're interacting with the public, have you been vaccinated? And you say, well, no, you know, I'm not. Then why are you out here? You see, we're not a reclusive society. There are many reclusive societies. They don't want to interact with the public, and they don't want to take vaccines and stuff like that. That's fine. Stay on your farms, whatever. But if you want to go out in the public and interact with the public and come back and interact with the devotees in the society, you have to be very careful. You have to be very careful. We are noted around the world for our external activities, our book distribution, our festivals. So if we get a reputation of not caring what the authorities say, public authorities, what they recommend, if we don't care about public safety, then people will hold that against us and use it as an excuse to not give us permission to have Rathayatras and things like that. So we should consider all these things. Don't just make it a personal decision. You're part of a society. You're part of a society that's very active in outreach. So we have to take that into consideration when we make our personal decisions. If I don't want to take a vaccine, then fine. Maybe you go find a corner in New Vrindavan or something and stay there. But if we want to go out in the public and interact and then come back and interact with the devotees in the temple, we have to be very, very cautious and careful about making those kinds of decisions. Because again, people hold us against us when we go out and ask for permits to do things. Right now in New York, they got permission to do the New York Rath Yatra this year. I am very happy for them. We haven't gotten our permission yet. If we get a reputation locally of not caring about public safety, they may not give us a permit to go out and do the LA Rath Yatra. I'm just saying, those who have not yet decided, take all these things into consideration. It's not just a personal decision. It affects the society. Hare Krishna.
First, I will make a comment. When you were mentioning about the mother meeting a son, and she was looking at, and the affection, the relationship they were having was so wonderful. And that reminds me of the arrival of Gopakumara when he went through all the different planetary systems. When they met with Krishna, it was this, they were crying, they fainted, and everybody around, the cowherd boys, the girls, everybody was like amazed, what's going on, what happened? So it's just the reflection that actually we're meant to meet the right person there. And you were also describing about the bricks, the man who was the first one, the second, and the third one, he knew the goal, he knew everything. And Prabhupada, you were mentioning that Krishna is actually meant to be loved, and that is our goal. He knew the goal, he knew everything. And when one purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions that, yes, this Krishna consciousness movement is for teaching people how to love God. Now I have a question. The question is it's a long thing, because Uddhava and Krishna met. And Uddhava asked Krishna, he said, my Lord, there are many different philosophers, many different opinions. He says, which one is best? Are they all equal, or is one of them that is best? And then the second part, he says, Uddhava to Krishna, he says, you already explained that devotional service is the highest. Then later on, Krishna said, actually, in every creation and destructions, these things happen. It appears to be lost, but then I explain it to Brahma. Then Brahma creates all these Prajapatis, Brahma and these great sages. Then, he said, all these varieties of philosophers with the leaders, like you say, the Gandharvas, the Charanas, the Vidyadharas, the Rakshasas, the demons, they have their leader and they have their proponents of philosophy. And each one of the living entities in this creation who fits that description, they follow that. So my question now is this. Lord Shiva was instructed by Krishna or Narayana, go and teach an Apasiddhanta to distract, because they were following the Vedas, right? So then I'm thinking,